you're not invoking St. Paul under these circumstances. And you want to speak this afternoon about that phase of Catholic education in which we are mostly not involved as yet, which is not a strictly institutional. As we saw, there are two kinds of education which the Church over the centuries has developed, the one formally in schools and the other for individuals who are not in Catholic institutions. There are a number of reasons why we should talk about this subject. The obvious one is because it is a wonderful apostolic opportunity. Another reason is because I believe this phase is reaching a critical stage where I believe the Church has got to be involved, even perhaps for the survival of its own Catholic school system. Moreover, it is one phase of Catholic education in which I have been involved for over 12 years and that I wish to pass on to you. First, the extent and the variety and some of the reasons why we should be concerned about this phase of the apostolate of teaching. The total number of young people who were not formally in Catholic schools in the United States is at least 5 million, maybe up to 7 million, depending on the calculation. The largest number, absolutely, as we would expect, is in the elementary grades. But the highest percentage is in the universities. In other words, the fewest number of Catholics in Catholic institutions is in the college and graduate schools. More important, however, than just the sheer numbers, more than 50% of Catholic youth are not in Catholic schools. That, I suppose, most of us don't advert to. But what is more serious and crucial, and one that bears heavily on our whole outlook towards education, is the reasons that these people have for not coming to Catholic schools. Those reasons are partly the reflection of the faith or lack of faith of themselves or their parents. They partly reflect our economic structure. Catholics, as a rule, are not from the more wealthy families, and the Catholic birth rate, I'm told, is up to 70% higher than the national. So given a lower bracket financially, given larger families, understandably, there would be financial difficulties. The first reason, then, and the most obvious one that we want to examine, is this business of money. Whether that is so crucial as we are led to believe, and I'm sure we tell ourselves, the main reason why more Catholics are not in Catholic schools is because they cannot afford it. Sisters, I do not think that is true. There are cases, I admit, where money simply is wanting, particularly, say, in the university level. On the other hand, even in elementary grades, certainly in high school, and most surely in colleges, many young people do not come to us because they don't want to. I made a bit of survey financially to impress ourselves with the fact that money is not the main consideration, by pointing out, for example, that Seton Hall University, under Catholic auspices in New Jersey, currently has a tuition rate of $700 a year. Princeton University, also in New Jersey, has a current tuition of $1,770 a year. DePaul University, Catholic, in Chicago, charges $816 a year tuition. Now, Chicago University, which has a large contingent of Catholics, has a current tuition of $1,710. A friend of mine who teaches at New York University, a Dutch Calvinist, whom I've been trying to help to become a Catholic for years, the trouble is he teaches Dante's Inferno and tells me what keeps him from the Catholic Church is hell. The doctrine on hell. Well, Dr. Harrison, that's his name. We were together in New York some time ago, and it was early in the spring, and I asked him what he was going to do during the summer. Normally, he goes to Europe or travels. He said he was staying home in New York. And he said, the reason is because I just got such a wonderful offer from the university for teaching. One night a week for 6 weeks, $1,800. So I said, Ted, you're not worth that much. How come they're paying you that fabulous salary? Well, he admitted he wasn't worth it. But he said, they just charge tuition, which pays us adequate salary. So then I inquired and I found out that New York University, private university, with 40,000 students, was charging $50 a credit hour. Fordham, I believe at the time, was $30. Yet, there are more Catholics on New York University campus than at Fordham University. Even state universities, although their rates are lower for in-state residents, but they're not that low, you'd be surprised. They range up to $500 and $600 for in-state students, depending on the state. But for out-of-state students, they are normally as high and higher than any Catholic college or university. And yet, tens of thousands of Catholics from out-of-states go to state universities. Another reason, and more cogent than money, is that secular schools are preferred because, as sometimes happens, no Catholic institutions are available easily within, say, walking distance for youngsters. And in some dioceses, this I think is true. It is also true in one large Midwestern diocese. The last I heard, there were 4 Catholic school buildings locked because there was no teaching personnel to staff them. So it may be that schools are just not available, just can't get in. Another reason, and this of course is a serious one, well, the reason for not going to a Catholic institution is not because there's none around or the money is too high, the rates are too high, but either the parents or the students, certainly for high school and college, the students, often make a deliberate choice on their own. A surprising number of young people going to secular schools all the way up from the grammar through the university are the products of mixed marriages, which of course is a commentary on how well or ill the promises in mixed marriage are kept. I remember some time ago lecturing in Baltimore, and a lady in the audience looked me up and asked me if I could do something to help her. She was married in the Catholic Church to a Baptist minister who now would not allow her children to go to a Catholic school. Could I help? Well, I talked to the man, a good, staunch Baptist. Lord bless him. He was just following his conscience. In other cases, there's a question, for example, of choosing because The courses that are offered at the local college or university or even in high school don't meet the needs. On the high school level, often technical training. Too few Catholic high schools offer, as you know, technology. Universities, broad spectrum of courses that we, with our limited budgets, find it hard to put into effect. But after we've taken care of all the apathy, after we've allowed for no transportation, did you read the Ohio Senate pass the bus bill this morning? Or has it still got to pass the House to do some hard praying? The most serious reason, though, is because either parents and or their children choose for preferential reasons, and these reasons are not always invalid. They recognize, as we have pointed out more than once, that the society in which they're supposed to live is a pluralistic society. I cannot overstress that. But Pope Paul, incidentally, he will go down in history, I think, as the great advocate for Catholic involvement in a pluralistic society. For us, mainly Protestants and Catholics, or of course agnostics and believers, it is felt, how many students have told me, that going any more into a Catholic school, for example, 12 years of a Catholic education, I couldn't count the number who have told me, either explicitly or implicitly, any more indoctrination would be too much. 12 years is plenty. They feel, in other words, that the kind of training they would be getting in a Catholic college I'm speaking of now, but also often in high school, would ill-equip them for the competitive, pluralistic society in which they're supposed to work. The expression of being prepared for life. See, these are things which may be cliches on their lips, but ought to bother our consciences. In other words, they choose schools in preference to ours because they feel they will be better prepared to meet the needs of their future life. They often speak of us as being unrealistic, and that's the kindest term they can use. They want to be ready for marriage and family life. And as I was told in one family, how can my children possibly, now of course this is naive, but this is what they're saying, how can my children possibly be prepared to live a married life when their teachers are not married? Now we can tell them we've read the latest book on marriage. So we've read the latest book on marriage, if we read it. But I believe there is just enough truth to all of these motives, from the least worthy to the most penetrating, to be taken seriously and to do two things. One, to reassess, which is the main purpose, of course, to reassess our own Catholic education, to ask ourselves the right questions, and then, please God, do something at least to meeting the needs of these multi-million souls who will never step inside of a Catholic school. What is our responsibility? I'm speaking now towards these people who are not in institutions under Catholic auspices. Allow me to say that a lot of people have questioned that we've got a responsibility, because, as you can imagine, this is one subject that I do a lot of talking about. I've been challenged by priests, by prelates, by religious. We've got our job. We've got our responsibility towards the Catholic schools, and that's plenty. I don't think it's true. At least in practice, the very oblivion, the sheer unawareness of this world outside, I mean the world of students, children from kindergarten on through graduate school, who are Catholics, fellow members of the mystical body with us, about whom most religious, I am confident, in 40 years of a religious life, have maybe not even breathed a single aspiration. They might just as well be on Mars. Another evidence of our not being much concerned about this is that we're not doing almost anything about it. In most dioceses, the CCD program is quite moribund. It's there. You've got a diocesan director. You've got a few enterprising sisters who volunteer Saturday mornings. And you've got some reluctant children attending these schools. But to think this whole thing through, and to feel that 40 minutes of a very hectic presentation to youngsters that couldn't be less interested begins to do justice for them, who are just as valuable in the sight of God as the best behaved straight A pupil in a Catholic institution. And even where the CCD program is quite active, I know something about it. It's quite recently been activated. I've been in correspondence with the national director for over 10 years, Father Collins, a more dedicated man you wouldn't want to meet in Washington. He has poured out his heart to me. We had a 3-day meeting. Then on the highest level in the universities, there are, by calculation, about 1,600 secular colleges and universities in America. 1,600. Their current Catholic enrollment is this side of 900,000. About 72% of all Catholics this past year were in secular colleges. By the mid-80s, at the latest, and this is a certain statistic, only 10% of all Catholic students will be in Catholic colleges. 90% will be in secular institutions. What are we doing for them? Almost nothing. I was invited to participate in an all-day program in the state of Michigan, sponsored by the Archdiocese of Detroit. They had three of us speaking. The Archbishop, Archbishop Dearden, Callahan, what about Callahan, the emerging layman, one of the editors of Commonweal, and myself. We spoke to 700 seminarians from the whole state of Michigan and several other states, including Canada. And among the reports given to those young seminarians was the fact that these almost 1 million Catholics in secular universities have only a little over 200 full-time priests devoted to their care. What is the basis of our responsibility towards an expression that I never used until I spent one semester at the State University? I came back, as you would expect, from the armed forces on a furlough to our theologate. And I was asked to report on the battle down there. And I told our young men, you know what I've learned? I've learned there are two Catholic churches in the United States. One that we know and one that we don't know. The one that we know is the one that goes to church on Sundays, makes the novenas, regularly makes the First Fridays, quite faithfully says the rosary, contributes to church, the humble, sometimes the simple. At any rate, the church that we are accustomed to, from which we draw our retreatants, and so often our vocations. But there is another Catholic Church. Its estimate conservatively is 10 million in the United States. Sophisticated, intellectual, highly critical, about which we know almost nothing. Now, what is our responsibility to this rising generation out of which this other Catholic Church is emerging? Well, first, we have the highest authority of the Church, the popes of modern times, as concerned as they were and understandably urged the building of Catholic schools, being surrealists, they recognize. Except in a few nations, and America is the one exception, established institutional Catholic education is almost impossible. Did I tell you about Italy? 5% being in Catholic schools? It is also built into canon law, the obligation incumbent on the bishops and the priests, and of course the religious, to care for those souls that are not in Catholic institutions. These souls we believe to have been redeemed by Christ. It is mainly their ignorance of the Catholic faith, which, and notice this, compounded often with a sharp intellect. Sharp because, and this may surprise you, we may be surprised sometimes at how little faith they've got. But sisters, that faith has survived battle after battle. And only God knows how much they've merited before God, sometimes for their very thin, thread-like hold on the faith. Their knowledge, as you can imagine, of things Catholic, though they've been baptized, maybe made their first communions, their knowledge of their faith and its responsibilities is infinitesimal, or their ignorance is abysmal, depending on the viewpoint. For example, and this is a regular thing, it's a kind of a stock question I ask my class, since so many come from such situations before they come to the university, and almost universally, those that have not had a full-fledged Catholic education think, maybe in a minute, that marriages between non-Catholics are always invalid. And consequently, any time they, for example, a boy wants to marry a divorced non-Catholic woman, he can do so. So they proceed to do so. This, incidentally, is one of the problems which even young juniors and seniors in the college meet. Divorced women, knowing men know how to get them, Catholics get caught. They don't even know the Church's laws are against it. Another strong motive why we should become interested in this other Catholic Church is because society needs it. The number of juvenile delinquents and often criminals, as we know, is growing, and the figures are staggering. Chicago last year, 1964, reported, I think I gave you, 90 unsolved murders. The whole number was 400 murders committed. Most of them by young people. And what is most saddening, the percentage of Catholics involved in this is way beyond their proportion in the Catholic population. I happen to have been prison chaplain for a while, at least I know that. Now, to meet this responsibility, on every level, I mean from kindergarten on through the university, will take more than reassessment. It will take a conscience searching that I feel most Catholic educators are not ready to make. Not yet. As often as I speak on this subject, unless I've been formally invited to talk on just this by people who have something of a good background in this, people feel strange. What's he talking about? It can't be that serious, otherwise we would have heard about it long ago. Now, I believe the largest single obstacle is a psychological one to us as Catholics and Catholic educators doing something. And that is our fear, an understandable one, that any kind of assistance to implement this type of Catholic education, which is so badly needed, meaning that over 6 million, conservatively, 6 million children who are in school but not in Catholic schools, is the fear that our Catholic school system somehow will be undercut. It will suffer. No, I recognize this is a great problem. It's the only big one that I'm meeting with my Jesuit confreres, who see me being used as a guinea pig by my superiors in an experiment, and are surprised that I'm surviving, and I'm more surprised to think that I actually think we should get into this along with our 28 universities, our overcrowded enrollments, and our understaffed personnel. Yet I think we should get into this. And I don't mean just colleges, because for you, most of your teachers are not in the college situation. I believe that where a real need of souls exists, and these souls are in dire need, all the theology I have ever learned or taught teaches me the Holy Spirit will always see those who cooperate with His grace. If we honestly face the question, do something, as I told my audience this morning, if one member of your province takes me seriously, it will have been worth my speaking to you. God will not permit what is so obviously good and indispensable, as I tried to impress you yesterday, will not allow that marvelous school system to suffer if we generously see to the needs of souls that are not within the hallowed, insulated walls of Catholic institutions. This trust in Providence may be illustrated in many ways. One that I think is easy to recognize because it touches us personally is in the number of potential vocations that I think are present in public schools. When I asked you to raise your hands yesterday and also yesterday morning, the people in Chardon, almost every hand went up. There were two reasons I had for asking that. One, the immediate one, and now the present one. First of all, to impress you with the fact that most of our vocations come from Catholic schools. And what a wonderful thing we've got, which needs development and deepening, so that God may continue to give His grace to others like ourselves to follow in our footsteps. But the second reason was the very fact that almost unanimously all of us are products of Catholic schools suggests that we have not begun to examine how many tens of thousands of vocations are there. A vocation is a call from God. But someone must be around to implement it. You remember that business on external graces? Somebody has got to be around for God even to give the transcendent grace of a vocation to say to the person, have you ever thought of becoming a sister or a priest? Now, it just so happens, and I could have said this 2 years ago or last year, the same thing. This past year, four, there were others, but four for certain, that I have on their own invitation come to my office, who are entering the religious life among the students of the State University. Two girls, I'll give you their first names, Lori and Michael. That's right, her name is Michael. She insists on being called that. Michael has been teaching for a couple of years in the public school system, just finishing, graduating from college this year, has been accepted by the Immaculate Heart of Mary community. Lori is joining the Sisters of St. Joseph. She's a junior. The two men, Tom and Ken, have just finished their master's work, got their MAs on the 10th of June. They are both entering the Franciscans. And are they ever welcome? And notice, my work at the university has to be extremely careful and cautious even, because the image that I present should be one of an academician and not of a pastor or a spiritual counselor. And yet, quite unobtrusively, these four, in speaking of this business of trust in providence, I like to combine two words that we seldom associate: providence in God and prudence in ourselves. Incidentally, they both come from the same root. Providence is God's foresight. Prudence is ours. Prudence indicates there are certain trends in Catholic education we cannot deny. The increasing number that are not coming to Catholic schools, the increasing financial pressure on existing Catholic institutions, the increasing pressure on your work in these schools, the limitations on all kinds of things you would like to do, no money, no time, no chance even to develop or perfect yourselves to do the kind of work that you and the community would want to do. Numbers, percentage, all those indicate trends which prudence suggests we ought to do something about. Prudence is a gift of God which reflects His providence. The very fact that He encourages, I hope, some people like myself to have the nerve to speak to people who have dedicated their lives to institutional Catholic education, to have the arrogance to suggest that there is an ocean of opportunity lying outside you've never heard about, indicates He must have plans in store for religious that we have not begun even to dream. Now, there are certain distinctions that have to be made as we get into the practicalities of this. The field is so vast, we could spend weeks on just discussing it. By distinctions, I mean, we are not to jump to the immediate conclusion that, well, we're doing a good job, which, Lord willing, we are in what we are. And therefore, that we are hamstrung, we cannot do anything of ourselves. That may be. Or now, that may be. Or following our present pattern, that may be. Consequently, some important distinctions. It does not mean that our involvement, I mean our involvement as religious teachers, religious that is dedicated to teaching, need be an immediate involvement. This is something which we can foresee into the future. We should be making long-range plans. All statisticians, students of economy, of the social sciences, projecting into the future 20, 30 years, We have done, we as Catholics have done almost none of that. I therefore would recommend, as I know where our own order is doing, to study the trends of the times, making an analysis of education, of the developments in school systems, of population pressures, of population mobility, and anticipate, at least at some time, and hopefully not in the distant 22nd century, to begin to prepare someone to become involved. Again, we as religious are limited in numbers. There are just so many of us. And we know what a long, or some desperate grind it is, even to make the grade of a final profession. We further know that, at best, we are weak human instruments with all the limitations of human beings. We cannot do much more, we say, even though we should multiply ourselves times two or three. It is at this point that we've got to invoke the Vatican Council and read a passage, pages 36 and 37, that should be memorized. For too long, sisters, we clergy and religious have, for reasons best known to ourselves, mostly historical developments, have come to identify Catholic education pretty much as our monopoly. And almost every lay teacher teaching in a Catholic institution, there are some exceptions, but by and large, their usual theme is that their position on the faculty, I don't see as barely tolerated because they are usually kindly treated. But they are certainly not considered normally as part and essence of the school system in which they work, which is exemplified at least by the fact that once a sister is available, the layperson is generally released. The council is speaking about the apostolate of the laity. Remember, this is not a pious exhortation. This, being a dogmatic constitution, is invested with divine infallibility. Let's read together. The lay apostolate is a participation in the salvific mission of the Church itself. Through the baptism and confirmation, all, and that's the big word, all, every single Catholic, are commissioned to that apostolate by the Lord Himself. Moreover, by the sacrament, especially the Holy Eucharist, that charity towards God and man, which is the soul of the apostolate, is communicated and nourished. Three big sacraments. Baptism as Christians, confirmation as those who are to promote the gospel, and the Eucharist to feed their love for their fellow man, who want to sacrifice themselves for the benefit of others. Now the laity are called in a special way to make the Church present and operative in those places and circumstances where only through them can it become the soul of the earth, and that is mainly in the secular institutions of learning. They are called by God to do it, and what are we doing to help them fulfill their vocation? We have talked, sisters, too long, too eloquently about our own vocation, and have forgotten, I mark my words, about the corresponding vocation of the millions of other members of the mystical body. Every layman, the council says, in virtue of the very gifts bestowed upon him, is at the same time a witness and a living instrument of the mission of the Church. Mission means communication. Besides this apostolate, which certainly pertains to all Christians, the laity can also be called in various ways to a more direct form of cooperation in the apostolate of the hierarchy. In other words, training specialists among the laity. This was the way certain men and women assisted Paul the Apostle in the gospel, laboring much in the Lord. Have we ever reminded ourselves what Paul would have been without the laymen who helped him? I think it's the closing chapter of his letter to the Romans. You can correct me if you want to bother reading the last chapter. I think he's got 16 lay people identified whom he is thanking for working with him. Again, the universal upon all the laity rests the noble duty, it's a duty of working to extend the divine plan of salvation to all men of each epoch and in every land. Sisters, this for most of us has not even begun to be touched. Is it any wonder that more than half the world have never heard the names of Jesus and Mary? Is it any wonder that our leakage in the United States, conservatively 250,000 Catholics, leave the church every year? The laity need us, neither clergy, need religious, to inspire them and instruct them in their divine mission of communicating the gospel of Christ. Now, it will not solve this problem, sisters, by, say, once a semester or once a year having a pious talk on the missions, or putting, now I'm not against it, please, sisters, putting, for example, pictures, drawing, which only sisters can do, beautiful things, to inspire the youngsters in their apostolate. It will mean rethinking our whole communication of the gospel in such a way that the lay people we teach will in turn be willing to go out into, among other fields, we're talking about one form of apostolate, however it's the biggest, the most important. That these lay people will be inspired and prepared to do the work which needs to be done for those millions of souls who are now being untouched by the gospel. Again and understandably, having been brought up in a form of teaching apostolate which has been mostly verbal communication, and verbal incidentally, just by direct voice, that is, speaking to people in a classroom, it is no wonder that so many of us might just as well be living in the 16th century. Before the age of radio and television, before the age of tape recording and the movie, before any of these marvelous discoveries of science, now sisters, this I'm sure is true, behind which discoveries of mass communication, I believe the main single reason why God inspired human genius to make these discoveries was that we, ourselves and through others, might use them to more effectively communicate the gospel. I couldn't be more sure of that than if I read it in the first chapter of St. Matthew, or surely in one of the letters of St. Paul. And consequently, sure, we cannot begin to buy or try locate ourselves. Even not all the saints were gifted with that privilege. You know what that means, being at two or three places at the same time. It's a rare privilege. We shouldn't aspire to it. But there are ways, short of miraculous, for multi-location, which the Lord is, he's been rapping at our doors for years. Sisters, get up. And this is true for priests too. You're living in a world in which I have developed means of communicating ideas unknown to the human mind in any age. And what's happening? We're having protest meetings. We say special novenas. To do what? To protect our children from the lascivious movies, from the bad TV programs. What have we begun to do to use these media, which the Vatican Council, among its solemn documents, has issued, and which I dare say few priests and villages have even bothered reading? Education. Notice the moment we get away from the concept of institutional education. Now, please, don't misunderstand me. All the things that I said about institutional education stands, and I could say more. We are products of it. I certainly am. But there are so many other ways, effective ways, so that we shouldn't conceive of our responsibility towards these people as being only within the walls of a classroom. A single lecture given by well-trained specialists, televised, can be viewed simultaneously by 40 million people. And there's nothing in any book of asceticism, certainly nothing in Christian revelation, which forbids us to use the media that God has allowed man to discover to multiply our effectiveness. The word that I would want to use strongly, this is not an option, it's a duty. Again, evidently, we, that is, you as one community, the Jesuits as another, and so on, we are only single social entities. No matter how big we are, we've got some 36,000-37,000 men, half of whom are still, as they keep reminding us, in their studies. We cannot do much individually, I mean as a collectivity. But how much more we could do if only we bethought ourselves of the beginnings of the ecumenical movement should be inside the Catholic Church. All kinds of collaborative efforts between Catholic schools, between religious communities, so they get together. See, they don't keep remultiplying themselves. Again, even though we collaborate perfectly, which we are certainly not doing among ourselves, the ecumenical movement about which we're going to talk at some length would be meaningless unless it meant that there are millions of fellow Christians baptized as we are into the body of Christ, as the Council says, who deeply concerned about the trend of affairs, worried about the loss of faith of their young people. We must share their concern. They love Christ too. They want the faith of their young people saved just as we do. If only we would think of cooperating with them. When was the last time any of you sisters have been inside of a public school classroom? When was the last time a public school teacher, I don't say just passed through your corridors, but was invited to assist at your classes, share in some of the teaching, join with you in setting up curricula, syllabi? Opportunities of all kinds are opening up to us if only we saw the opportunities as God is giving them to us for using even the power of the state in release time, in shared time. But you see, none of that, all those instrumentalities will be there. We won't budge, or we will say a Hail Mary. But to really move individually and collectively, it's like a dream. Finally, before we leave this, there are agencies in the United States, national agencies, four that I've worked with intimately for over 12 years. The National Council of Churches, the American Association of Colleges for Teacher Education, the American Council on Education, and the Religious Education Association, each one of which is mightily concerned about the lack of what they call religious literacy among the teachers who are in the teaching in the public schools, and of course among the students who are products of public education. Millions of those children are our Catholic children. I'll never forget a meeting that I attended in Indianapolis. It was sponsored by the superintendent of the Indianapolis public school system. He had a lot of clergymen there, including myself, the only priest. And he told them, "Do you know why I'm calling this meeting? The reason is because it took me, he a Methodist and a layman, who am not professionally in religion, I've never preached a sermon in my life, it took me to call you people together to do something for the morality and the religion of the students in our public schools." After 18 months of meetings and negotiation, Indianapolis worked out a plan to implement the teaching of moral and spiritual values in the public schools of Indianapolis that has since been adopted by other systems throughout the country. In other words, I think for most of us, it is unawareness. I recognize, even after the next conference, that all that I can hope to do is just to perhaps stimulate you to do some thinking and, of course, praying that whether you or others following you will become aware of the needs. Given that awareness, I am confident the charity of Christ will urge you and others to help those souls who need us. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, amen. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Amen.